You're listening to Trucking Questions from the Audio Road with Kevin Rutherford. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. You can ask questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, tax, technology, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the Audio Road.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The number to join us, 8888 Road Dog. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. If you've got questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health, getting started as an owner-operator, life on the road, whatever it might be, pick up the phone, give me a call. We'll talk about it here on the air. I'll do my best to get you an answer. If I don't have an answer, sometimes somebody else listening will jump in and help us out. And if all else fails, I will go do the research and find the answer. So if you've got questions, you're in the right place. That's what we do. We take your calls. We answer your questions about everything trucking. And we're going to get to those calls in just a couple minutes. It's time for me to nag you a little bit, and I want to nag you about what you're doing with your drive time. If you are not maximizing your drive time and learning, you really need to figure out why not. Whether it's, talk radio, certainly like this show, there are lots of other shows you can learn things on, but more importantly, audiobooks and other forms of media. I can't think of a single other occupation that while you're getting paid, you can also be learning. About 90% of the time you work is spent driving, and you could be learning that whole time. There are so many good books, so much good material out there that I am still shocked when I talk to so many drivers and owner operators who are not taking advantage of it. I just got back from almost 4 months on the road, and I loved the fact that I was listening. I was doing about 30 hours of listening a week, at least. Some days I was doing 10 and 11 hours a day on some days, and I absolutely loved that. I got caught up on so many books I had been behind on. Still have a huge list on my Kindle. And now that I'm back home, I work pretty hard to make sure I have 2 hours of reading every day. But finding 2 hours when you've got all the other things going on in life and work and business and the show and everything else, neighbors and family and dogs, and it's tough to find that 2 hours every day. I get up really early in the morning to make sure I can get some reading time in the morning. I try to combine reading with my walking on the treadmill when I can, but if you are not taking advantage of your drive time, you really, really should be. You could have the equivalent of a PhD in no time with all the information that you have available to you to listen. You know, I spent a lot of time during this last trip listening to books on health. Really, really new, cutting edge information. It's amazing what is available that we're not hearing about. Now, I'm not going to get deep into the details. We do that on the Friday afternoon podcast, Destination Health with Kim Cockerham. And sometimes I join Kim. And if you want to get deeper into the health, we do it on that show. But there's a bigger picture that I see emerging, and it fits in with something I've talked about on this show before. I've talked about the fact that you've heard the phrase many times, the rich keep getting richer, the poor keep getting poorer, and the middle class is disappearing. I don't disagree with that. I absolutely see it. All you have to do is look at the statistics, look around you. It is true. It's happening. The rich are getting crazy rich. The poor are struggling more than ever, and we seem to have more of them. And the middle class seems to be disappearing, moving in one direction or the other. I've said I see the same thing happening in the owner-operator world. I saw last year, 2014, I saw the single best business report for a single owner operator that I have ever seen. And he's one of our regular callers, and he took home just under $200,000. Single best business report I've ever seen. Now, I've seen some teams do a little better than that over the years. And I think this year it's going to be tough. But that was an amazing number. I also saw more single owner operators over $100,000 net than I have ever seen. I saw more owner operators over $1 a mile net than I've ever seen. And I'm talking about in the last 30 years. So, you know, there are people that say, oh, trucking was so much better in the 70s. We were making the same rates and fuel is 28 cents a mile. Yeah, you know what? I was around then. Truck drivers were not making $200,000. Very, very few owner operators were coming anywhere near $100,000. So there are people who wish it was like the good old days. Not me. There are some things about that. It was nice back then, but we're not going back there. We have to figure out how to make it today. On the other hand, we have all those owner operators doing so well, and yet we probably had more owner operators fail last year than any other year as well. The people in the middle seem to be disappearing. So what happens in the owner-operator world seems to be a mirror of what's happening in society. And this is where the health thing comes in. After all the reading I've done, and I'll tell you what, the information that I've learned is not the stuff your doctors know. It's just not. Doctors aren't paying attention to this stuff. They don't seem to be reading the studies. If they are, they're not putting together the big picture. I've talked to doctors, I've talked to naturopaths. They don't get it. But here's what I see that fits in with this same topic. The next place I see that same split happening, we talk about the rich getting richer, the poor getting poorer, owner operators doing better, owner operators going out of business. Everybody in the middle seems to be disappearing. The next place I see that same trend happening, and it is going to happen fast, I think, is with health. You are going to see people who pay attention to this information, and it's already happening. It's just not happening in big numbers yet, but I'm seeing it more and more. You are going to have the people that pay attention to all this new information about health, and they are going to get extremely healthy, probably healthier than humans have ever been on this planet for a couple reasons. And yet on the other end of the spectrum, the vast majority of people are getting sicker than humans have ever been on this planet. And there's not going to be a lot of people in between. I see that trend coming. And everything I'm reading leads me to believe that's exactly what's going to happen. Now, here's the other thing that'll happen. I believe that everything else in your life has to follow health. If you don't have health, it's just difficult to do anything else. If you do have really vibrant health, and I'm talking about a condition that I don't think people can really even imagine. Somebody that is lean and strong and full of energy and clear thinking, when you've got that, then everything else gets better too. You'll be better at business. You'll be better at relationships. You'll be better at money. So that split will get even bigger. And I think health is going to be the next area that is going to drive that. So it's up to you. Which end of that spectrum do you want to be on? I know exactly where I want to be. Let's get to some phone calls. I'll get a call started here, and then we'll carry it through the break. Let's go to Arkansas. Daniel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mr. Rutherford. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Health.
All right.
I went in the store looking, reading more than I've ever read before, one shopping for food, and I kept seeing canola oil, soybean oil would come to blue cheese, and I like that when I have the chicken. I'll mix a little hot sauce with it, and it makes a great little dip in sauce, but the whole paleo thing, you know, the low carbs, I mean, they may have low carbs, but the soybean oil, the canola oil is not the greatest, and I'm wondering if, A, you know, if there is a blue cheese available on the paleo thing, B, if it's just you can make your own, and C, Lisa was saying something about blue cheese not being so good with the grain brain thing.
The reason that, oh, there's the music. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you why, if you want to be strict paleo and strict grain free, well, we'll talk about paleo and dairy. That's a kind of a point of contention, but then we'll talk about blue cheese specifically. Stick around. We'll be right back with Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to go back to the phones. All right, Daniel, first of all, if we're trying to stay healthy, whether we call it paleo or whatever it might be, if we're trying to stay healthy, most of the commercial oils, soy, corn, canola, all of those they're too heavy in omega-6s, and we get way too many omega-6s already in our diet. So you want to stay away from those. They're heavily processed. So that's why you have to stay away from most commercial sauces, dressings, foods, that kind of stuff, is because the oils they use, they're just the cheapest, highest processed oils you can find. Now, blue cheese, the reason it potentially could have gluten is because the blue in the cheese is mold spores, and they can actually use either wheat or rye bread to grow those spores. So you would actually get the gluten transferred into the spores because they were grown on wheat bread. It doesn't have to be the case. There are other ways to make blue cheese. So if you wanted to make a blue cheese dressing healthy, you would first find a good high quality blue cheese that wasn't grown, you know, on spores. You're going to have to do some investigation to find that. And then you could make the dressing yourself with, you know, a better quality oil or dairy. I've made lots of blue cheese dressings, and I don't even use oil in mine. I use, yogurt, blue cheese, some buttermilk, things like that. And it doesn't really require any oil. The commercial, they use oil because cool. It's cheap. So, yeah, that's what I would do as far as that goes.
Okay. And I did see something, but it was like a yogurt-style blue cheese, and I had never seen that before. But I should mention that when I had blue cheese, I never actually ate the chunks there. It was just mainly to get I can't call it anything else but the liquid portion of it.
Yeah, it's got the flavor from, you know, the parts of the blue cheese. But and I love blue cheese, and I'll still eat it, but I make sure that I'm getting a brand that wasn't grown with wheat or rye bread. So again, it comes back to knowledge, knowing what you're looking for, and then doing some hard work to find it. But that's where I'm talking about. We're going to see this split, and it's going to be based on health. Let's go to Missouri. William, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you, Kevin?
Good. What's on your mind today?
I called on, I think it was Sunday or something, we kind of at the end of the segment, and I was asking some advice as far as what I can possibly do with my company to maybe convince them to get some of these upgrades on this new Cascadia Evolution to try to, like, use me as a test subject possibly, you know, save some more fuel mileage and things like that. And in return, I can use that as a tool for myself to increase my revenue down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we there were so many things we were going through in the call, and then we kind of got rushed at the end. Probably the biggest point I was trying to get across to you was that I've worked with a lot of people in your position, and you would think that companies would just love people like you. You care about their profit. You care about their company. Now, obviously, you have an ulterior motive. We all do. We all look out for our best interest. But that's the beauty of civilization and business, is that if we understand win-win concepts, we can be looking out for our own best interest, and yet we can still bring value to other people. And that's what you were trying to do. What I found is that most companies don't appreciate it. I don't know if they don't understand it, if they don't see enough of it, if they're just too busy to pay attention, but it's very frustrating. And I've watched people get frustrated. I've been an entrepreneur all my life because of this. I have only been employed by someone else for a very, very short period of time. Going back to, I mean, I had my first job when I was 14, but by the time I was 16, I was generating my own money painting cars at home. By the time I was 19, I had my first official business. It was a gym. I just can't work for somebody else. And I hear things in you. And my point I was trying to get across to you was, it's wonderful that you want to do those things. I have a feeling you're going to get very frustrated because you're going to put in the time, do the hard work. You were even talking about spending some of your own money. And I don't think you're going to see much in return, and I don't think you're going to see a lot of effect, and I don't think you're going to see any real appreciation. I could be wrong, but then I wanted you to just be thinking about a future where someday you own the business, whether it's a truck or any other business. I can usually tell pretty quickly whether somebody has an employee mindset or an entrepreneur mindset. And in my opinion, neither one is better than the other. That's not the point of this.
Yeah, it's, can just I comment on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, yeah, and I kind of got that, but we, you know, we were rushed and everything like that, and I just wasn't sure because, you know, I've only been out here over the road since June of last year, but I've been driving. I did local tanker fuel hauling for like 8 years, and I absolutely love it out here. And as much as I would love to be my own owner operator out here and have a nice truck and build it all up and make it right, I know that there's companies out here I can make just as much money and not have no risk, you know. And I, in my older age, I've just learned to go with the flow, and I'll do what I can to help out the company. But if they're not going to reciprocate, then I'll just go about doing, you know, being the good employee and just make the money, you know. And but if I did do something to the truck and they allowed me to, would I be able to claim that on my taxes as like an unreimbursed employee expense?
Yeah, you can. And I would. Now, here's the other thing. The odds of you ever being audited are slim to none. People in your position, the audit rate is less than 1%. So, and things only matter in an audit. People do things all the time that aren't right on tax returns. They never get audited and they think, well, it must be right. I've been doing it for years. So I look at it a couple ways. One, if we were to get audited, could we defend this? This is one of those that I'm about 80% sure we could. The IRS gets a little weird about whether or not it was necessary and required by your employer So, and that comes down to interpretation. And then the other thing is, we could take the same issue, go through 10 different audits with the IRS and end up with 10 different answers. I mean, that's just the way the system works. But on the other hand, we can also look at what are the odds of being audited. As an employee in your income bracket, it's less than 1%. So
yeah, my wife used to do money, teach taxes. She's not going to let us do anything that's not even remotely illegal. So, I mean, if through her, then it's not going to happen. But I was just thinking starting out with just a fleet air filter, you know, because you were saying how, you know, the evolution, it's kind of already on that glider path, but it's still starving for air.
Yep, absolutely. So on that truck, the no question, the air filter is a great place to start. So, yeah, I think you're going into this with the right attitude. Just realize that I've watched this happen many, many times, and companies just don't care much. I don't know whether they're just so busy or what it might be. Let's head off to Idaho. Rex, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Want to get really involved with Audible, so I got the account, but I guess I need a little bit of a tutorial Audible for Dummies. I talked to Lisa a bit. She says, let Kevin explain it. I've got an iPhone 6 and a real fancy Delphi radio, but that's where it ended. I never went through the process.
Okay,
and I'd like to listen to your iPod stuff too, all your back shows, and I just haven't done it, and I just need a little bit of a tutorial.
Got it. So tell me a little bit about your Delphi radio. Is it Bluetooth enabled?
Yeah, it's the fanciest one that they had with a satellite built in the radio and a bunch of little USBs and all that.
Okay, so on top of all that, is there a little round jack like a headphone jack, and it should be labeled aux in, AUX in?
It's not labeled, but I'm almost certain it's right below the USB. It's one of the high-end Delphis from Pacific.
One of the things that's happening is some of the high-end, they're going to Bluetooth, and that's fairly common. But because they have the Bluetooth, they're eliminating the aux in. So, and if you've got both, I'm going to give you a couple ideas here on what you can do. But you've got what you need. And I'll walk you through this, and you're going to find this is pretty simple, and you are going to love the results. So stick around. We'll be right back. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to go back to the phones. I was talking with Rex about listening to Audible books. Rex, so we'll get to the radio in a minute. Have you gotten to the point where you can get the book on your iPhone yet?
No. I got to the point where I gave Audible my credit card. That was 6 months ago. Excellent. So I've got some books out there.
Okay. Good. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to pick up your iPhone. You're going to go to the App Store, just like you would go look for any other app. You'll search for Audible. The app will be free. You'll download the Audible app. When you go to open it the first time, it's going to ask for your login. So the same login you created when you gave them the credit card, you put the login in. And that's going to connect to your Audible account. And if you have books sitting in your account, you're going to be able to download them right then to your phone. Now, I will tell you one thing that confuses a lot of people, and it confused me in the beginning. They have this Audible app, and I'm trying to figure out how to buy a book from it, and you can't. You would think that you could buy the books. The reason you can't is because Audible doesn't want to give Apple 30% of every book you buy, and that's what would happen. That's just Apple's agreement. If you have an app and you buy anything through it, Apple gets 30%. So what you do is you go to your Audible account, buy your books, do your thing, and then open the app on the phone, and they'll download to the phone. I just wanted to make sure you didn't get frustrated trying to figure out how to buy a book on the app, because on an iPhone, you can't do it. So
if I'm at a truck stop, just go and open my browser like I'm doing a Google search or something and go to Audible and buy the book on Wi-Fi? Exactly.
Yep.
Or download it?
Yep, exactly. Okay. The other thing about the books is that they are only, so you buy them from the browser, whether that browser's on your phone or your laptop or whatever you want to do, and then you download them into the app. Now, they are only going to download on a Wi-Fi connection. They won't download on a cellular connection. I download them all the time right to my phone while I'm, you know, going down the road with a little, like a Verizon hotspot or an AT&T hotspot, even though that's still cellular, the account can't tell the difference. So just know that when you download, you're using up your data, if that's the way you do it. Sure. But the best way to do it is with a little bit of planning. You know, you can sit in a Wi-Fi spot, and I mean, I've got 60 or 70 books on my phone in my, you know, Audible account. So you can download as many ahead of time as you want. And then I'm going to give you the super easy way to do this. You get yourself a cable that is what's called mini stereo to mini stereo. So on both ends of this cable, it has that small headphone style jack. One end plugs into the phone. The other plugs into that auxiliary in on your radio. You hit play on the Audible app, and the next thing you know, you're listening to your book.
Over the stereo.
Over the stereo. Yep.
Could I do the same thing and listen to the show? Because I'm listening to you right now on my Blue Parrot.
Absolutely. Yep. You would do the exact same thing. You could run that same connection. You can listen to podcasts, audiobooks, music. Anything that originates from your phone will come right through the stereo.
How about to listen to your old shows? Is it the same way?
Same exact thing. You just open up any podcast app that you have, and the iPhone comes standard with a podcast app. You subscribe to the shows, they download to the phone, you plug it in with the same cable, hit play, and you'll be listening to those through the stereo as well. Now, you can do it Bluetooth, but honestly, I am not a big fan of Bluetooth. That technology still needs some work. If you have two or three different Bluetooth devices, like your GPS is Bluetooth, your phone is Bluetooth, the radio is Bluetooth, your headset might be Bluetooth, some of the CBs are Bluetooth, everything starts fighting with each other, and it just gets to be a pain. And the quick, easy way to do it is with that cable, and you're done.
I was going to make a confession. I waste a lot of time trucking. There's probably five guys that call me, and I'll listen. I don't get paid to do shrink work, you know, but they'll sit there and tell me all about their troubles, and it's the same over and over, either bitch about work, job, whatever, or how they loan their kids money and they don't get paid back. What I'm telling you is, and what I'm trying to do is get this system perfected and then convert those guys over to that, and then we'll schedule a therapy time from,
That's right.
From 4 to 5 every day. If you want to call for therapy, otherwise, don't bother me unless it's an emergency, because I'm listening to, you know, 7 Habits or something is what I'm trying to work towards.
Well, I can tell that once, and like I say, get the cable, play around with the app, download a couple books, you will be hooked.
Yeah. And I want to hook these other guys up to them so they're.
Yeah, there you go.
Bothering me all day long. Not that they're bothering me because I'm interested in listening to them because they're friends, but, you know, enough about just wasting time on the road to stay mentally engaged.
Well, and here's the thing, and I've talked about this before. It's one of the reasons why I felt so disconnected from the trucking industry and the rest of the drivers. And honestly, I'm sure that other industries really aren't any different. This is the one I know because I live in it, work in it. But I have a hard time being around people for too long because people tend to be very negative. They do talk about the same things over and over. And all they do is keep readdressing the problem and nobody ever gets to a solution. And that just doesn't work for me. So I used to stay away from truck stops. I would go park at malls. I would read, I would listen to books. And I think by nature, we can be very negative. And if we get around other people that are negative, it feeds on itself. And it is just this downward spiral. If I get away from all that and I listen to good, positive messages and books and other things, it changes my whole attitude, my outlook. And I just try to keep myself surrounded with that stuff.
Well, the other thing I want to tell you is if I'm loading or unloading, and hopefully I've got a good signal, I'm still a Facebooker, and I just try to pick out everybody that's been at a CMC, like Steve Cron or someone like that, that's always positive and has good things to say, and I always have my negative filter set up. And if I see something negative, I just fly right by it. I don't even pay any attention to the haters because I want to know what makes the 12-7 perform the best. And if someone's doing better than me, I want to know why and learn how can I duplicate that?
Excellent.
So that's what I look for. And I don't know, you know, you see guys that hate wide singles and want to get rid of them. They're junk and they don't work for me. Well, everything doesn't work for everybody, but for the most part, you know,
yeah.
It will.
You know, we've got three or four guys that I can think about running pre-emission trucks that have broken the 10 mile per gallon barrier. Steve Krohn's one of them. We're not talking about once or twice. We're talking about 30 days documented. This is the real thing. And those guys have done so many things to their truck that there's no question this stuff works. So the people who still believe, oh, that fuel mileage stuff doesn't work, would have to explain to me then why one truck can get 9 miles to the gallon and another truck gets 5. If nothing works, if nothing changes fuel mileage, then every truck on the road would get the same fuel mileage. I mean, that's illogical. I don't know why people would even think that way. So congratulations, by the way, on taking the next big step. You had the Audible account. I'm glad you had it sitting there. Now you're taking the next big step. You're going to be hooked. I swear, you start listening to books and you realize how much time you have and how much you can learn. It is amazing. Let's go to South Carolina. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you today?
Good. What can I help you with?
Well, I got a couple of things. One of them, Lisa sent you over my third oil sample there. I was wondering if you could take a look at that. And while you're looking at that really quick, you had a phone call about a month ago from a caller that was wondering if he could just swap wheels from the steer axle to the drive axle, obviously still running the duals. And you aren't quite sure yet, so didn't have an answer for him to look into it. Well, I did the research on my truck, and what I found out is I knew I had 6 aluminum wheels and 4 steel wheels. Good was I took the part number, the Alcoa part number off of all my wheels, and what I found out is the only difference between any of the wheels is how they're finished, whether it's on the outside or the inside.
Okay. So when we're talking about single tires, all those rims are identical except for finish. So it's
exactly
just the way they're turned or put. Okay. You know, it was one of those questions where I thought, my God, I've been around trucks for 30 years. How do I not know this? It took me by surprise. I was like, honestly, I don't know, but I should. So, and I didn't get a chance to do the research with the CMC and travel. So I'm glad you did.
Right.
Thanks for that. I got to put you on hold. I'm going to come right back. We'll talk about your oil sample. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, real quick, we're heading into the fourth segment. So at the end, I'll say I'm done. Good night. I've got to get out of here, but don't hang up because we're going to come right back. Looks like I've got a lot of questions right now, but I'll keep you informed as we move along. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Bill in South Carolina. So again, Bill, thanks for that information. I feel much better, so I don't have to sound so ignorant the next time I get that question.
Certainly.
Your oil sample, nothing too major.
Now, this is an 07, so it is PTR, but no TTF.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, because we're getting a lot more soot than what I normally see in a Series 60, but for an EGR, that's more common. Now, it's not enough soot that's going to flag it, but
right.
It's still something we look at, and that soot is also what is causing your viscosity to climb.
Okay, so that has, the soot is what's causing the viscosity. Does that have anything to do with the base then, or not really?
A little bit, but more of what I think is happening to the base is, it looks like we've probably got a fairly significant amount of blow by. How often do you have to add a?
Well, that's the other thing with this one. I mean, since I went to the 1030 synthetic blend, I have been adding a lot. I think on this oil change or oil sample, I think I added 5 or 6 gallons. So I have a few things going on. Could a contributing factor be a poor performing turbo? Because I know my turbo is not up to snuff. I'm going to be replacing it here in another month or so.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Because the whole thing that we need to make this engine burn the fuel completely, that's what we're looking for. Soot is an indicator that we're not burning the fuel completely. So the soot is the byproduct left over. Soot on the EGR engine, though, obviously we're bringing dirty air back into the engine. So it's already a challenge.
Right.
If the turbo isn't functioning up to par, that means we're not getting as much cool, clean air into the cylinder. So we're not going to burn the fuel as efficiently. We're going to get more soot. So that makes sense. Now there's nothing on here that's hurting anything yet. It's just an indication. The base, because you went, I'm sure you already had some wear in the cylinders. You're already using some oil. When you go to a 30 weight, now you have more space around the ring. So you're going to get a little more blow by. That may work itself back in, but you also get more combustion gases the other way from the combustion chamber down into the into the crankcase. And that's what depletes the base. You're not in any danger of your base is still, there's plenty there.
Okay. Now, when I change out my turbo for their warranty, they're recommending to do an oil change as well as change the oil lines that go to the turbo, both the supply and the return lines. So one other thing I've been doing was I talked to an oil distributor here and looking to get a better price on my oils and stuff. And they have Chevron as opposed to Shell. So I'm looking at possibly changing over to Chevron. I think I'm going to get away from that synthetic blend and go to a straight synthetic. And one of the things that he was telling me, and this guy seemed to know quite a bit about oil, he goes to all the training and all that, is all that it requires to make it a synthetic blend is to have 8% of the synthetic to make it a blend. So he says, you know, you could have anything to make it a blend, whereas a better quality oil would be a pure synthetic. So I'm going to go to a straight synthetic. I don't think they make a 1030. It's probably going to be a 1540, which may help a little bit more on that oil consumption.
Yeah, and that's still a really, really good oil to run. A full synthetic 1540 is, you know, the 30 weights are fairly new. So we're looking at them. They've got a good track record so far, but I still love a full synthetic 1540. And the oil guy's absolutely right. This is just another marketing scheme. I mean, labeling, packaging, and marketing is starting to drive me crazy because, in essence, we're being lied to. I mean, come on, 8%, 10%, and all you look on the package and in big words, you see synthetic. And even if they call it synthetic, people don't understand that. They've heard all these years synthetic is so much better. Well, it is, but you're getting 10%. But they don't realize that. So this kind of stuff drives me nuts. He's right, though. A full synthetic is the way you want to go.
That's what I'm going to do. Once I change out that turbo, I'm going to go with that. Probably it's 1540 synthetic Chevron then.
Yep, excellent. That'll work.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's head off to Indiana this time. Ken, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mr. Rutherford. How are you doing today?
Great. What's on your mind?
Totally agree with you on that negativity. The only thing is, when you're telling them the correct answer of what they need to do, they'll fight you because they think they're right and they're proven wrong to start with, and you give them the right answer and they're still arguing with you. But for my question,
let me jump in real quick, because you know this is something I've had to deal with for 25 years. People always ask me, you know, Kevin, I'm trying to do what you do. I'm trying to help other people, other drivers, other owner operators, and they don't want to hear it. They don't want to listen. They argue. And I'll say, hold on, stop, because you're not doing what I did. Not even close. I mean, I understand your intention and your intentions are good. I never try to give advice to somebody that isn't asking for it. And I never did. I mean, I never just struck up a conversation with somebody in a truck stop and started saying, hey, here's how you get better fuel mileage. Here's how you pay less tax. Because I realized people don't want to hear that. And so, but they say, well, then, I mean, then how did you do it? Because if I just walk around, nobody's going to ask me. And I said, you're right. That doesn't work either. I put myself out there. And in the beginning, it was writing articles about taxes. That was how I got started. I wrote an article about taxes. I faxed it out to, I think it was like 16 truck magazines back then, said, here's an article. You can have it for free. I'll write one a month if you want me to, and you don't have to pay me anything. And out of 16 magazines that I was offering free columns to, and they didn't have to publish them, just I'll send it to you every month. If you like it, use it. If not, don't. And I was asking for nothing. Out of 16 magazines, only one responded, but that was all I needed. I started putting a column in that one. In within a year, it became their number one column in the magazine. I still am good friends with the publisher who gave me that break way back then. He's a great guy, still in the industry. And from there, I went out to, you know, I was with RPS at the time, which became FedEx. And I said, hey, I'll come in to your terminals and I'll come in and I'll talk about taxes, you know, for an hour or two as the guys are getting back from their runs or whatever. And you don't have to pay me, and people can come and choose to sit down and hear if they want or not. And I did. And a couple guys would show up and I'd talk about taxes. But so I just put myself out there and made the information available. I never tried to give anybody advice that wasn't asking for it.
Right. But even the ones that do ask for it, we'll come back and say, oh, well, you're crazy.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, no question. They still do that.
That just drives me. And at that point, I tell them, okay, well, then go ask somebody else.
Right. Right.
Don't come back to me.
Yeah. No, but I still get that all the time.
But my question, I'm looking at a 2002 Pete. It's got an SC15 500 horsepower Eaton 10. Speed, 370 ratio, and it's got 1,000,001 on the odometer. What's the value of that truck?
It has the engine.
I like the. They don't know because it's at a dealership. So as far as being opened up, I don't know if it's been opened or not. Okay, I'd imagine it has with 1,000,001. but
No, not necessarily. Not on a pre-Acert C15. I wouldn't count on that.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. In fact, if I had to put odds on it, I would say that it hasn't been. This is very likely somebody that could have followed the same model I used for years, run an engine in a truck to a million plus. I used to take my Detroits to about 1.3. I would oil sample and I paid attention. I knew what kind of condition they were in. And then because I had drivers, I would get rid of them right when they needed the in-frame, go buy another one. And that's the best value proposition, because once you do the in-frame, now you got to run the truck another 2 or 3 years to get your money back out of it. And even then you're not getting all the value back out of it. So there's a good chance somebody ran it, said, okay, it's probably going to need an in-frame soon. I'm done. That's one possibility. So we will, since the dealer has no paperwork, I would approach the negotiation as this is an original engine. We might be able to go do a blow-by test and prove different, but we don't want to tell the dealer that. So we could do that on our own, but we would approach it saying, this thing needs an in-frame. I wouldn't pay more than 15.
How much?
15.
15?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because they're asking 20 on it right now. So,
Well, that's a starting point. And let's say it's super clean. It's got great tires with lots of rubber. We could start adding some value, but I wouldn't pay them 20. I would start my negotiation at probably 15 or less. I got to go. Thanks for joining me. Be safe.
Thank you.
Be profitable. Do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, here we go. We're going to start a second hour.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, health, technology, taxes, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, buying and selling trucks and trailers, you name it. We'll talk about it here on the air. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call me. We're going to get to those calls in just a couple minutes. Speaking of taxes, and I was just sort of, it's one of the things we talk about a lot on this show. If you are an owner-operator, taxes are an issue you need to get a handle on. You need to be on top of them. You need to have a somewhat of an understanding. Now, I don't expect you to be able to do your own tax return. I know some owner operators who do. I think it's amazing. And if you can do that kind of research and do the reading and understand them and stay on top of them, it is a wonderful thing. But you need to find a tax preparer that will work with you. Just like I say, you need to build relationships with shops. You need to build a relationship with your tax preparer. You need to visit them more than one time a year. You need to be doing some tax planning, and you need to be asking questions and verifying the answers so that you can start to get an understanding. If you're going to run a business, you really don't want to be in the dark about this. It is, and if you want to grow a business, you really need to get on top of this issue. We are back. We've been in the accounting business for quite a long time. We are back in the tax business now. So if you are looking for somebody, we can help. Grab something to write with. I'll give you that phone number. It's 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-3835. If you filed an extension and you've been putting this off, call us. We'll build the relationship. We'll keep you from paying the most tax. We'll try to get the biggest possible deductions and keep your tax bill as low as possible, but also keep you safe in an audit and Along the way, we'll educate you little by little so you start to understand taxes and how they affect your business. That number again, 855-800-3835. We're going to get to the phones. We're starting off in Louisiana this time. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin? It's been a long time listening to your show and everything. I'm a lease operator, I guess. So that's what they call it. I've been out here for a while. But when I finally found out about your show, I heard different things about it and everything. But I got about 6 months left, and my truck's paid off now. But one of the questions that I'm wondering is, I listened to the show and everything. I don't like putting a lot of weight on my truck. And I'm wondering, is there a truck that I need to be looking at? Or should I, you know, which way to go on them? Because I just don't like a lot of weight. And I hear a lot of things when I've been to shops about carrying heavy weight. And I just don't like heavy weight on mine.
Well, okay, I'm trying to understand the question then. If you don't like heavy loads,
heavy loads, like 40,000 plus. I know now. I set my weights. I don't put 40,000 in the truck now. I'm just wondering, is that a wrong kind of thinking or something, or am I missing something? Because I look at different places. I'm going to lease on to someone else next year. I'm actually, when my truck is done, but I'm just wondering, because I see the heavy weights all the time, even with the companies that I'm looking at, and I'm just wondering, am I got the wrong way of thinking or what?
No, it's a different way. Well, I don't even know if it's a different way of thinking. I just think it's thinking. And so many times people just don't think. They just do what everybody else is doing. You're thinking, and there's nothing wrong with this thinking at all. In fact, if you study rates, it starts to become pretty apparent that the heaviest loads tend to be the worst paying. Now I'm talking about in general freight. If we go to some specialized, if we go to bulk, if we go to certain flatbed operations, heavy haul, then they understand the value and they pay by the weight, and heavier loads pay more in many operations. I get that. That's understandable. That's a decision you make. If you want to go haul heavy haul, there's great rates out there. You set trucks up to do it. But in general freight, general van freight, reefer, dry van, either one, the heaviest loads seem to be the most common and the worst paying. You look at water, soda, beer, paper, the stuff that you can find everywhere. It's cheap. And it is hard on the truck. It's hard on fuel. It's harder on the driver. It's less safe. It's harder on brakes and tires. And yet it pays the least. So, no, the smart people are the ones that are saying, yeah, this stuff's easy to find, but it's not very profitable, and it's kind of a pain in the ass. Why don't I just work a little harder and go find the lighter freight that pays better?
Exactly. That's the way I was going with it. Because, I've been out here 21 years now, and I've went from a company to a lease operator. And of all those years, it's just like you said, and my division, like drive-ins, I've done drive-ins, reefers, and even flats. And it's just everything is heavy that I would run into, and it just tore up the truck. And now that I'm, like I said, I got 6 months left and my truck is paid off. I just don't want that heavy stuff on my truck. I don't want it near the truck. I don't need it. If I have to work harder to find that lighter load, and that's what I'll do. And that's just one of the things.
One of the things you want to do then is you want to make sure you stay away from the carriers with the standard kind of, I won't call it forced dispatch, but where you have a dispatcher, coordinator, fleet manager, driver manager, whatever the hell they're calling them these days.
Exactly.
Load planners, whatever it is, where they kind of decide what you're going to do. You want to stay away from that. You want to go to a company like Landstar, where there is no dispatcher, where you do your own load selection from a board and you pick and choose what you want to do. Or there are some very, very small carriers that you kind of are, in some cases, you can go find a carrier and all you're really doing is paying them to use their authority and their back office for some of the paperwork, and you go do all your own load planning. And I've seen deals where you give them 10%. They get 10% because they have the authority and the insurance, and they'll do the fuel tax and a couple other things, and you kind of go run on your own.
Well, me and my wife, we went to the Mid-American truck show just recently, and we're just trying to figure out whether to go either with Landstar or Mercer. But I feel that Landstar still, Landstar's offering, like you said, the main deals, but I think there was one Mercer. They still have that driver manager or something like that. Someone that's always in the middle, a middleman, I call it.
Yeah, now it's just do a lot of work with Mercer as well. And even though they have that position, there's still a lot of freedom in their system. They have a great culture over there. It's one of the reasons that we only work with a few carriers. And that's one of the reasons we work so well with them, because they understand the owner-operator model. They really want you to see. So I would do the work and look at both of those carriers. Honestly, I know people think I'm crazy when I say this. I would schedule a visit to Jacksonville to go see Landstar and Louisville to go see Mercer. I would go visit them in person before I made the decision.
Oh, we were down there. I didn't speak to the main guy. We were at, like I said, we were at the show, and then we were right in Louisville. And I have a couple friends that they worked over here with me, paid off their trucks, and they went over to Mercer. So I've got them there. I just chime in, telling me what's going on over there. But my way of thinking, because it's just the way I've been. Everything is, that heavy thing, and I just don't want to. I've done all this work onto my truck. I'm actually going to, the Pittsburgh power thing, I have a 07 Volvo, 780. Is that Pittsburgh power muffler, is that a standard muffler that I could add onto this, or?
Yep, absolutely. You could do the Pittsburgh Power Muffler Fleet Air Filter. In fact, you can get all that stuff at Pittsburgh Power, and they can tell you what else they can do for you as well. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. We are off to California this time. Don, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, thanks to real estate markets coming back and all, I have made a decision. We are going to sell the house. Bank the profits. She's going to come on the truck with me, and we are going to relocate to rent a room from my mother in Reno. And I'm just wondering, besides address changes, what's involved in moving my business from California to Nevada?
Do you have authority?
No, I'm leased to Landstar.
Okay. Sole proprietorship, LLC, or corporation?
Sole proprietorship, only 9 months in.
Excellent, because this is really simple. You don't have to do anything.
Okay.
It's just address changes. I mean, anybody that, you know, any agency you deal with, it's just address changes. There are no legal requirements whatsoever. You just change your addresses and you're good.
So I don't need to refile fictitious business name statements in Nevada, just basically move my company from Southern California to Reno.
Let me address that, I guess. You're talking about what's called a DBA. There are some, you know, local business license, state business license kind of things. Honestly, I can tell you in 30 years of owning trucks, I never filed any of those in the first place. Those things are, and nobody cares that if you file those or not. Those are primarily to protect a name or a trademark if you were interested in doing that. Honestly, I could care less. We're not out marketing to anybody. We're not trying to build a brand that's recognizable. I have never filed a fictitious name form, a local business license, a state business license, not once in 30 years of owning trucks.
Right. Well, my third-party lease company required a DBA for the lease on the truck, which once we sell the house will be paid off.
Yeah, then it won't matter. You know, now you might run into specific things like that. Like, for instance, there's no way I could predict that your third-party lease was going to require a true DBA, but they did. If you run into things like that, then you'll know it. But I can tell you that I have moved my business from Ohio to Jacksonville, Florida, from Jacksonville to Orlando, from Orlando to Colorado, from Colorado back to Ohio, from Ohio to Oregon. Never done any of that stuff.
All right, great. And I got one comment if I got a second.
Sure.
A previous caller talking about weight. As I stated, I've been with Landstar for 9 months. I keep a spreadsheet of all my loads. As of the end of April, my average weight per load since I've been with Landstar is 21,000 and change.
Wow.
So it is very possible to pick your loads at Landstar and stay light. For instance, the load I'm picking up this afternoon and taking from Calexico, California to Indianapolis is 5,000 pounds.
Nice. I love that kind of stuff. And I'm actually working with somebody who's at Landstar now. He pulls deck, open deck, and his whole goal is to stay that light. And we are converting his 5-axle truck and trailer to a 4-axle, not a lift axle. We're going to single out his tractor. He's got a spread on the trailer. And, you know, you can still scale quite a bit of payload like that. He might even go to some heavier tires on the steers, but in the beginning, we're going to try not to. And he's just going to stay under loads that he can scale on 4 axles with a spread.
Right. Yeah, I'm in van, but I remember that call.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not out of the question. There are spread axle vans.
Well, we're going to pay the truck off first, and then we're going to probably pick up a signature van.
Oh, there you go. Excellent. We are going to work on a spread axle and lift axle configurations and some other things on the vans as well. So congratulations. Sounds like you're having a great time in the first 9 months. So I love hearing these kind of stories. And I love the fact that, you know, we are going to talk more about what can we do with 4 axles and a spread and a couple other ideas and just shoot for that better paying, lighter freight. Let's go to Georgia. Jamel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing? I just had a quick question for you. I'm still a company driver. From listening to your show, you know, and doing my research and doing the hard work as a company driver got me ready to take it up a step to become my own operator. And, I mean, I have good credit, but before I wanted to be an owner operator, I went out and bought me a brand new vehicle. And I done had the vehicle little over a year. And I was wondering, I've been trying to see, do you know if there's any way possible or what steps I could take to get rid of my vehicle to get a semi-truck? Like, do you know if, you know, anyone do trade-ins on commercial for personal vehicles? I mean, any step I can take to get rid of this car, because I'm like, I'm paying all this money a month on this car. I mean, I'd rather have a semi-truck sitting in the yard putting money in that.
No, absolutely. So, yeah, there are several options here. Nothing super easy. Well, there are some super easy ways of doing this. You'll just end up with a lot less money if you do it that way. So okay. It comes down to, if you're not in a big hurry and you want to put in a little bit of work and you can be patient, your odds of getting more out of the car go up. If you want the easy way, like I'm just going to drive in, sign some papers, my car's gone and I have a truck, you're going to end up with a lot less cash out of the deal. Depending on where you are on the value of the vehicle and how much you owe, you could be upside down. Have you run those numbers yet to see what the, like a Kelley Blue Book, you know, and you can look at retail, trade-in, wholesale, those kind of things. Have you looked up any of those prices?
Yes, sir. When I first bought the vehicle back February of last year, I mean, I paid like $45 for the vehicle. And I bought it brand new. I looked it up on Kelley Blue Book, and it had a vehicle that's only worth like $22,000. I didn't know if that was right. But besides that, I haven't done anything. I just figured that those numbers wasn't right. I mean, I bought the vehicle brand new, and it's a 2013 Cadillac.
Okay, so what you can do, you can go online. Kelley Blue Book has a really detailed way, so you can put in the year, the absolute exact make and model. You can put in the mileage. You can choose every single option that was available originally so that you are looking at an identical version of your car. All of that stuff is literally exact. The only questionable part is then they'll ask you the condition. But they'll give you a pretty good explanation. You know, if it doesn't have any dings, scratches, body damage, no interior stains, that kind of stuff, then it's excellent. And they'll describe each level of condition. You choose the condition. And when that value comes up, you're going to see a couple different values. You're going to see a trade-in value. You're going to see a private sale value. You're going to see a wholesale value. Private sale will be the highest. Trade-in will be somewhere in between. Wholesale will be the cheapest. That's where you're going to get the least amount. But those numbers are actually pretty darn accurate. If you do the whole process and get in all the detail, those numbers are going to be accurate. Then what you need to know is, what is your payoff on this thing?
Okay.
The difference is how much money you're either going to get or how much money you're going to owe. Now, a lot of people, let's say that it turns out that the value on this thing is $30,000 and you still owe $34,000, just so I can throw some numbers out there. A lot of people would go, oh, well, wait a minute. This is stupid. Why would I get rid of this car and have to pay $4,000? Then I don't have as much money. But you also don't have that giant payment sitting out there every single month. So, so some people will say, oh, no, I'll never get rid of it because I'm upside down. That doesn't make any sense. Sure, it does. You can either spend $4,000 now, given my numbers, and be done. You don't owe anybody anything anymore. Or you can go on owing $30,000+ for the next however many years. And that's $30,000+ that you could use towards your business.
Exactly.
So that's what you've got to work out. Getting rid of it makes sense. You don't want this kind of bill hanging out there when you're going to be out on the road working too hard to enjoy this thing anyway. So that's another issue. So hold on. I'm going to come back to you right after the break. We'll talk about your options for getting rid of this thing. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Before the break, I was talking with Jamel. I'm going to head back there. So, Jamel, you've got a couple options here. As far as being able to trade in the car directly for a truck, there aren't that many places that will do that. There are some. I don't know of any offhand. What it would take is for you to use something like the truck paper, which is the biggest source of used trucks. Thousands of dealers list their trucks in there. You can either go to truckpaper.com, or I think you can still pick up the paper versions. And what you would do is the way I would approach this is I would, if you look in the program that I sell about getting started as an owner operator, there's a whole chapter. You sit down, you design your perfect truck, you start looking for it. Takes lots of phone calls and lots of time, but that's part of the hard work of being in business. And then if you find a truck that's close to what you're looking for, you call the dealer and say, hey, this might sound like a crazy question, but do you take trade-ins on cars? And you may find somebody. Who knows? Depending, you said you had pretty good credit. So you could also look in places like Craigslist and eBay and call people up that have trucks for sale and say, hey, I've got a car. Are you interested? I know it sounds crazy. You get a lot of no's, but once in a while you get a yes. And that's how some of this stuff happens. Your other options, I'll tell you the quickest, easiest thing you could do. You could drive it down to a CarMax today and they'll buy it from you. Takes about an hour. You're going to get close to the lowest price of all because CarMax is in the business of making money. They know how much they're going to pay you for that car. They'll tell you right up front. There really is no haggling. They'll say, here's what we'll pay for it. It's the easy way out. And then if you're upside down, you just pay the finance company the rest of the money and the car's gone. The other thing you do is like anybody that wants to sell anything. You clean it up, you detail it, you take beautiful pictures, you go post it, you know, online, you put ads in, you know, car traders and you wait for a private party to come and buy it from you. That is going to give you your best possible outcome as far as money. And that's the way to get the most money out of it is to do the work, clean it up, take great pictures, you know, do a nice write up and put it out there for sale everywhere you can think of. And somebody will come buy it. And that's how you get the most money out of it.
Okay. Well, I sure appreciate it. Just didn't want to have no truck and have that car too. When, like you said, I'd be on the road doing the hard work. I won't really have time to enjoy.
That's right.
I appreciate it, Kevin. I appreciate everything you do, man.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Good luck with that. And anytime you have other questions about this whole process of getting started, give me a call. Love to help you out with it. Let's go to Illinois. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Oh, Jerry.
Gary. Okay, there you go. All right. What's on your mind?
I have an oil sample. I have high fuel dilution.
I am looking at it now, and you are correct. You do have high fuel dilution.
I blew the engine up on Halloween last year and had it rebuilt, and it took number two cylinder took the head, so I had a new head put on it, and never knew the history of what the injectors were, so I had new injectors put in, and this is only the second oil sample since the rebuild, or just, you know. So, and every time I do change oil, I change all the filters and put new oil in.
Okay.
Which is about two gallons.
Okay. So this sample is showing that you've got 40,000 miles on the oil. Is that not correct then?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. All right.
Because when I did the rebuild, I dumped the oil the first time right away.
Got it. Okay. So the fuel dilution isn't horrible. How much idling are you doing?
Hardly any.
Okay. So you are one of those borderline cases that, you know, 2 years ago, I would have told you, you need injectors, just go get them. If they're
because brand new.
Well, and then I was going to say, if they're new, either one of the injectors is bad or we've got a bad seal or whatever it is. So we have to figure out what it is and solve it. I hesitate to do that now because I can't tell you how many times we have somebody that's right around high 3, low 4% fuel dilution. They go into a shop, pay them a bunch of money. They come out and the next oil sample is worse. So I've been telling people.
Is this under warranty yet? Because I had it done at a Detroit shop.
Yes, it will be under warranty. That doesn't mean that they're going to get it right. It does at least means you shouldn't have to pay for it. So this is a tough call. This is one that if it were me, sometimes that's the only way to answer the really hard ones. If it were me, I would wait one more oil sample.
What was that?
I said, if this were my truck, I would wait for one more oil sample before I let anybody tear into the injectors again. I would just make sure that this is truly a leak and that it's getting worse. Now, you do have fuel dilution. We see it in the viscosity. It could be some leftover. We might have had a leak, but I would wait. I would do my next oil sample at... you've got 40,000 miles on the oil when you did this sample. I would do the next oil sample when I had 55,000 miles on the oil, and then I would make the decision.
55, so another 15?
Yeah, 15 after the last one. If the fuel dilution gets any worse, if it's any higher than 4.4, then I would go in and get it worked on. If it comes back lower than 4.4, then I would just wait it out.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Cause I have been doing my oil samples at about roughly 25,000 is my goal number, I should say, but I'll do this one at 15.
Yeah. And that's normally what we do. I like going to 25, but when we have a problem and like I say, I don't want to send you down and let them tear into the injectors because it could come back worse. When we have a problem, then sometimes we do it sooner. So I would say let's do it at 15 and see what happens.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Let's head off to Arizona. Paul, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Doing great. What's on your mind?
I had a couple of questions. I wanted you to take a look at my profit gauges business report from 2014.
All right.
And then I had some questions about your tax services because I'm looking to change tax people.
Got it. So let's take a look at the business report. Now we're going to start at the top. One of the things that we do very, very different, we like to break the rules sometimes. You know, the phrase bottom line has always come from the bottom line of a financial statement because that's like the most important line. That's where, you know, we see the real results. Well, we thought, shoot, if it's so important, why don't we just put it at the top? So that's right. What we did. So that summary line that you see is kind of what we want to look at right off the bat. We're looking at the whole year. And the first number we see, total profit. I just want to see it in dollars and cents. After all the expenses, after all the stuff, how much money did we have left? You had a great year. Just over $93,000 in profit. That is outstanding. You did that on 126,000 miles, nothing, you know, out of the ordinary. And you were able to profit 74 cents a mile. Now, you know, we've had some callers recently who have decided that, you know, there's risk in business. It's hard work. And this isn't a criticism of them. I'm glad they made that decision. I've heard comments many, many times over the years where people say, well, I mean, I hear most owner operators and they're not making much more than I am as a company driver. Just right. Aren't many company drivers making 74 cents a mile, nowhere near that. So that's a great way to look at it. Now we can also go down through the report, get into the details and see where we're really doing well and where maybe we could still make some improvements. So if we look at your revenue per mile, $1.78 on all miles, what kind of trailer are you pulling?
Sam.
So that is that's a great number. 2014 rates were good, but that is still above, significantly above average for what we saw last year. So I hear the music playing. I'm going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll dive into the expenses on this and see what we find. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rothenberg. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Paul in Arizona. We were going over a business report. So, Paul, let's take a look at costs here. The first section, we do fixed cost, which is those are things that you have to pay every month, whether the truck runs or not. Things like truck payment, insurance, tax and license, that kind of stuff. You are spending 21 cents a mile total. Not horrible. That's not a big number to overcome. So no big deal there. Then when we go down, we look at variable cost. I focus primarily on fuel and maintenance. So
right.
What year is your truck?
It's an 09.
Okay. So we've got emission issues to deal with. Fuel is 56 cents a mile. Not horrible, but pulling a van, being able to choose your own freight. We had people last year who were able to get into the mid 40s pretty consistently doing the same kind of stuff. That's 45 cents a mile and you're at 56. So what that shows is the potential. There is a potential, reasonable potential, to add another 11 cents to your bottom line of 74, which now puts you up at 85. Now that puts you up over $100,000 a year in profit. So that's a great number to shoot for. Maintenance-wise, you're at 18 cents a mile on an 09. That's about average.
That was real high because I had a tires and a turbo and I just had a ridiculous amount of repairs last year, which I haven't had since I've had the truck. So,
well, and let's talk about some of those tires. We can kind of amortize. Tires last roughly most people about 3 years, 2 to 3 years. So we could say, okay, the tires, that's just normal wear and tear. A turbo isn't. A turbo is one of those things that, on my pre-emission engines, for every 10 engines I took past a million miles, I might replace one turbo. On these emission engines, we replace turbos like, oil filters, I swear. So we do know that 09 is going to have a higher maintenance cost. When you say you had a lot of repairs, that's the problem with these things. There's just a lot of stuff to fix on them, and they're expensive. We can keep the cost of an older truck, a pre-emission older truck, we keep the maintenance cost under 10 cents a mile. You're at 18, but there's not much I can recommend. I mean, if we do things like the fleet air filter, the OPS, the FAS, those all lower our lifetime maintenance costs. So if you don't have those are something to think about, but we're not going to make a huge difference in this 18 cents a mile. If you work hard, we might get it down to a consistent 13 or 14. We might pick up a couple more pennies, but your numbers look really good. You are, if we look at it as a percentage of revenue, how much of every dollar that you generate are you able to keep? You're keeping about 42 cents. I say a great goal to shoot for is 50. And you could do that in fuel mileage alone.
Right.
But numbers look fantastic. I mean, keep doing what you're doing.
Okay. Cool. My other question was on your tax services, because I want to change. I'm looking at changing tax preparers. My wife and I filed jointly, and right now I'm a sole proprietor, and I wanted to find out, I mean, do you guys do just the taxes for trucking, or would I be able to send my stuff plus my wife's
stuff? Oh yeah,
absolutely. Our whole return.
We are completely full service, so that you're an owner operator, we'll do the business part. We'll do your personal tax return. If you owned a hobby farm on the side, we would do the farm return. If your wife owned a jewelry business, we would do her business. I mean, we specialize in trucking, but because we partnered with Clifton Larson Allen, they are a full service. We can handle any tax issue you're ever going to come across.
That's what I wanted to know then. My question, along with that, so I want to, when I get off the phone with you, if you can transfer me back to Lisa so I can find out how to get our stuff to you. The other question was, is it possible when I send my stuff in, is it possible for someone there to look through my profit gauges and all my categories to make sure that I've classified everything in the correct subcategories and all of that?
Yeah, we can do that. And actually, what I'll have you do, that's not really the tax side of things. That would be Brittany. Okay. You may have worked with her in the beginning anyway, but I'll transfer you back to Lisa. She'll give you the information you need on the taxes, and then we'll get you in touch with Brittany and we'll go through all your accounting. I can tell you that just looking through it myself, just quickly scanning your report, you've done a really good job. There isn't anything major out of place at all, but Brittany will go through it a little closer and make sure. Let's head off to Indiana. Glenn, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I talked to you last week and got your advice on, I have $1,000 extra a month, whether I should pay it toward a principal on a car loan or invest it into my retirement. Your advice was to invest it into my retirement. My question today is, I'm in a Roth IRA right now. I'm a company driver. My company doesn't have a 401k. Is there any other kind of tax advantage investments that I should be making other than the Roth IRA?
Well, you are correct. And I want to clarify my answer only because when I gave you the answer, we were able to go in more detail and I was able to explain why. The only reason I had you invest in retirement instead of pay off the car loan, because the car loan was such low interest rate. So,
right. You
know, if somebody is out there saying, oh, Kevin thinks I should invest in my retirement account instead of paying off my car, but they've got a 12% car loan, then my advice would be different. So I just wanted to clarify that. You had such a low interest rate, there's no point paying that off early, and I wanted you to keep doing the retirement account. As long as you are an employee, you're going to be fairly limited on what you can do. In fact, the Roth is about the only thing I recommend. Now, what are your future plans? Are you ever thinking about going into business, or what do we have coming up in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I have thoughts of it, but right now I'm planning on just staying a company driver.
Okay. And here's the reason why. If we're trying to really maximize taxes, and the Roth is only going to give you so much, your employer's not offering a 401k, so there's not much you can do there. If this situation isn't going to change anytime soon, we can look at annuities. Now, I'm going to make a book recommendation, and I may have recommended it last time. And the reason that I'm going to make this is because if I tried to explain to you the way you need to do the annuities and the type of annuities, it would take me another hour and a half. But I can point you to the book and tell you, listen to the whole book because it's the best financial book I've ever read, or go right to the section on annuities and then make the decision. Annuities can be a great vehicle for to avoid taxes. The problem with them is they can be horrible investments, and the fees and commissions can absolutely kill you. So I never used to be a fan of annuity at all until I read this book and found out there were a couple annuities out there I didn't even know existed, and they can make sense. Now, I still like the Roth first. I still like traditional retirement accounts first, but a lot of people are in the position you're in. If their employer doesn't offer one, go do the Roth, then you're limited to less than $6,000 for most people. And if you want to do more, annuities are a way to go, but I would not want you to go talk to somebody who sells annuities. The only thing I want you to go do is listen to this book. And
okay.
The title of the book is Money, Master the Game by Anthony Robbins.
Okay. Let me ask you another quick question real quick. You're asking if I were planning on going into business. Were you asking that because I've heard of you talk before about the huge amount of personal 401k that you can have for yourself? Was that your reasoning for asking me that question?
Yeah, that's the reason why. Once you go into business, depending on your profit, like the last guy I talked to, he went through his business report. He made $93,000. If he wants to, he could contribute like $45,000 of that to a retirement account, to a 401k.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it, Kevin.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. I'm all out of time. I've got to get out of here. Thanks for joining me. If you need any help from us, give us a call. It's 855-800-FUEL. 855-800-3835. We'll see you back here next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Do the hard work and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.
Thanks for tuning in to The Audio Road. If you have any questions, give us a call at 855-800-FUEL. That's 855-800-3835. Check out the website at letstruck.com and find us on facebook.com/letstruck.